Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with our friend Ed Alexander. Ed and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this, the final day of September. We are about ready to close the books on September 2015. We're coming to you live from AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We also make the program very accessible to you by live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And then if you would like to hear a portion of the program, and we hope you will, podcasts and all of our programs are archived for you 24/7, again, on my website, buckmastershow.com. And a big shout out to our media sponsors, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahuarita Sun. And our newest media partner is TucsonLifestyle.com. We're going to begin today with a discussion of the upcoming Pima County bond election, followed at the bottom of the hour. We're going to meet another of the Tucson City Council candidates, Kelly Lawton, will be joining us. And then followed by Anthony Jimeno, we'll talk about UA football Wildcats. Boy, where do you go from here in preparing for a very tough outing coming up in Palo Alto on the campus of Stanford University on Saturday evening? Our live line number, 790-2040, if you would like to call in to talk about the bond questions. Our guests will be happy to try to answer your question. If you'd like to become a friend of the program, and we hope you will, our Facebook page is under my name. It's Bill Buckmaster. And we're trying to reactivate our Twitter account, getting that going. So if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it's the address is at Buckmaster Show. It's under my name again, but this time it's very formal. It's under William Buckmaster on the Twitter package. Well, coming up very soon, the ballots, the mailing will begin next Friday. Ballots will be going out. Voters here in Pima County will be deciding the fate of the largest debt financing plan Pima County's ever pursued. There are 99 projects that would cost taxpayers almost $816 million. The proposals are divided into seven questions on the ballot. They cover flood control improvements, open space acquisitions, public health, affordable housing, tourism promotion, and parks and roadway improvements. So if voters approve all seven questions, taxpayers will be making payments until about 2042, the total payout estimated at $1 billion. Our two guests, local attorney Larry Hecker. Mr. Hecker, the chair of the Pima County Bond Advisory Committee, that was a 25-member bond advisory committee that had nearly two dozen meetings over a number of years. Mr. Hecker will be speaking in support of this bond package, and Joe Bogart is with us. Mr. Bogart is a spokesman for Taxpayers Against Pima Bonds. Mr. Bogart was one of five people on the Pima County Bond Advisory Committee that was not in favor of this particular bond package. Larry and Joe, how are you gentlemen today?
Doing well, Bill. Thank you for having us.
Right. Thank you, Bill.
Well, you two are getting to know each other quite well. You've been doing a lot of events all over Southern Arizona, and you've got some more coming up in Pima County. But we're glad to have you both with us here to share with our listeners some of your thoughts on this bond program. So we'll try to get to some of the bottom line issues here. Larry Hecker, I'll begin with you. Why vote yes on this bond package?
Well, Bill, we've been at this for 10 years, putting this package together. We started shortly after the last major bond election in 2004, and we were presented with a list of necessary projects that totaled $3 billion. These weren't frills. These were projects that we needed to have, that we need to have. Parks, museums, libraries, sports fields, economic development projects, things needed to keep this community and this county moving forward. We were able to whittle that down to what we feel were the most important, the most essential, and the most critical projects And they're broken out, as you say, in, mm-hmm. in the seven separate propositions. It's a balanced package of that are very interdependent and work with one another.
And so you say to keep the community moving forward, you're advocating a yes vote.
Absolutely.
Joe, what about it? How do we keep the community moving forward and vote no, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think this is a growth package, and that's my problem with it. I think businesses coming into our community and noticing that our bonds were supporting about 30% of them are going to not-for-profit corporations is a negative. Also, you look at the projects themselves. So we've got a bunch of like $1 million, $2 million projects, and then we've got one huge project. And I think that if you look at the go to the county finance report, you'll find a lot of names there of the beneficiaries of these funds. And I think it's just we need to concentrate on actually growth projects rather than county properties that we want to invest in. And all of these nonprofits, a lot of them are on county property.
Larry Hecker?
Yes. I think if you look at the folks who have contributed, yes, we have some very responsible and committed corporate citizens, but the county reports don't reflect the hundreds of private citizens who are contributing small dollars, but many, many hours in support of this bond election. It's a tremendous broad-based coalition of people who are supporting the passage of all seven bonds. And yes, nonprofits are receiving bond proceeds, things like the Desert Museum, our museums, our hospitals, and they help ease the burden of government, number one, but more importantly, they help support our $2.6 billion tourism industry that employs 20,000 people. That's a bedrock of our economy. And
all right. Let's go to our live line, our friend Jim Kelly. Jim, I think you, Ed tells me here that you have a question for each of our guests. You want to begin with Mr. Hecker? Go ahead, Jim.
Sure. Larry, you know, I still want to know why the county thinks it's necessary to prop up nonprofits. A successful business or a successful nonprofit is successful. If they need our tax dollars, maybe there's something wrong with them. So I want to know why you think they need to be propped up. But on the other hand, Joe Bugard, listen, there's a lot of good projects for the South Side to rebuild the infrastructure that is 75 years old. Everything north of Fort Lowell is brand spanking new. That was paid for with impact fees that was later passed on through the price of the houses. We don't have that on the South Side. And it's going to take county money to rebuild that infrastructure. So I'm for the bond, but I'm really ticked off about propping up these nonprofits that should be standalone.
All right. Okay. So let's go with Larry Hecker first on the nonprofits.
Okay. And I guess the way I would answer that, and I unfortunately only heard the last part of your question, but what I would suggest is take a look at the nonprofits that are receiving funding. These are nonprofits. We're not supporting them. What we're doing is we're making them better. For example, the Desert Museum, one of the leading tourist attractions in the country. The bond monies will allow them to include some additional attractions that will make them even stronger. Santa Vera Mission, again, major component of our tourism industry. The Air and Space Museum. It's these kind of nonprofits that are receiving support. They'll be responsible for maintaining the projects once they're built. One of the largest is going to Banner University South Campus, which is the old, it's just Keno Hospital, which is the only hospital on the south side of town, and this will help them increase the level of services that are available to the residents in that area.
Okay, and Joe, your portion of the question from our friend Jim about South Tucson.
Well, I agree that there's a lot of infrastructure problems that we have here, and I think that is a great objection of mine, is that this money is going to elsewhere. And I think what we need to do is defeat the bonds in total and then come back and set up a program, ask the jurisdictions to submit projects that needed to be funded to improve our infrastructure. So and I've never heard of a not-for-profit corporation that was a generator of growth in a community. I've always anticipated that they were actually beneficiaries of prosperity, and we do not have that here. So I don't think we ought to be directing money at it.
Do you want to add something, Larry?
Yeah, if I could, because I certainly disagree on the latter point. I think if you were to ask the folks over at Sun Corridor, that used to be TRIO, the Regional Economic Development Organization, they would say that tourism and tourism attractions play a very major role in their efforts to attract major employers to this community. They come here, they see what we have, and they say, you know, this would be a nice place to move my business. And I think there are several anecdotal examples of that. It's very important, not alone the 20,000 people that they currently employ.
What is the investment that people would have to make? What's this going to cost a taxpayer, Larry Hecker?
The average homeowner will see about an $18 a year increase in his or her property tax, secondary property tax. And it'll stay there. It won't increase. The Board of Supervisors has capped the amount that could be spent to repay these bonds. The average business, the increase will be approximately $100 a year.
What about that, Joe Bogart? Isn't that a pretty minimal investment?
Actually, we asked two questions here. One was, what will it cost the taxpayers? And that was the question. And mm-hmm. what the response was is, what will our taxes be?
Okay.
Those are two different things, because the existing debt that we have right now will be paid down over time, and within 13 years would be pay off. In my house, in my home, my primary tax runs about $1,200 a year. It would go to zero. So therefore, you are actually, the cost to the taxpayer is much greater than it would have been if we'd gone ahead and paid off the bonds. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not for bonding, but properly done.
Yeah, and Joe, if I could add, I think if you look at your tax bill, it won't go to zero. I think when you look at your tax bill, there are several other taxing authorities that will continue to tax you, and there's the county primary tax. I think the secondary property tax represents about 5% of your total property tax bill.
Well, I looked under the secondary property tax, which we all got and noticed how it gone up, was $1,200 secondary property tax.
Okay.
All right. What, Larry, want one quick comment for the break, or?
No.
I would just
urge, in response to the earlier question, that people, if they have questions, take a look at the projects that are being funded. Go to the county website, where there's a very detailed description of each project and the factors that the bond committee considered in making a recommendation that they be included in the package.
All right, it's 12:17 on the Buckmaster Show. Larry Hecker is here, and Joe Bogart, 790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation. We'll be right back. Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Sometimes opportunity knocks. You've definitely met opportunity, and it may have even found you online. Opportunity also calls. It calls to see if you have an open appointment, even though it's really last minute. It calls to place a rush order for delivery, and it calls to ask about your holiday hours. With Cox Business Voice Manager, you can always follow up with opportunity. So when it leaves a voicemail, you'll get it right to your email, which means all of your important messages reach you online. With Cox Business, you'll never miss an opportunity, no matter how it presents itself.
Bundle Cox Business Voice Manager and Internet for only $99 per month with a one-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card. Mention reward promo to qualify. Online redemption required. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 1/3/16. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Other restrictions apply.
Okay, then, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. We're talking about the Pima County bond election. Larry Hecker is here speaking in favor of the bond proposal, and Joe Bogart is speaking against it. And on our live line, calling us at 790-2040, Pima County Supervisor Allie Miller. Allie, how are you?
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I just had a question. I just heard Mr. Hecker say that, and I don't know, are you talking about the average home, the 150,511?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. You know, if you go to page 9 of the voter guide, he doesn't have the $150,000 home in there, but he has the $120,000 home, and he has the average annual tax rate, which is a lower value, is $4,753 per year. And that's on page 9 of the voter guide. And the $150,000 home is about $60 a year is the average annual tax increase.
Yeah, there's
conflicting information in the voter guide. If you look at page 5, the first paragraph, he's talking about the first year only, although that language was taken out. But if you look at page 9, it shows you exactly how to calculate the tax impact to your home. And he's got $120,693 home. You take your limited valuation, and you divide it by, or you multiply it by 10%, and then you divide by 100, and you multiply it by 0.3938, and that gives an average annual tax rate of $47.53 per year. And what I'd like to know is, can you reconcile the differences?
And without having those documents in front of me...
You don't have the guide in front of you.
I don't have the guide. I do have the bond ordinance in front of me that was passed by the supervisors, and I think that does have the reference. And I think the difference may be the $18 is the increase in secondary property tax, and what Supervisor Miller may be referring to
is
The total. That's the only thing I can think. Again, without having that document in front of me, and I do have the 175-page ordinance, but I can't find.
Okay.
Well, I recommend that this. I know, Mr. Buckmaster, you like to make sure you provide accurate data. I can send you the link so that people need to be informed that the average annual tax rate for a $120,693 home is $47.53 per year, and it's $60 and change for a $152,511 home.
And again, I think the distinction is the amount of the increase that would result from this.
You're talking the first year only. Assuming that the rate stays at 70 cents per $100 of assessed value for the old bonds throughout the whole project, and that's not the case because they get paid off and they go down to zero by 2031. So I think this is something that really needs to be clarified for voters, and I just wanted to make sure that we do clarify that. And I can send you the link, Mr. Buckmaster, if you'd like it.
Why don't you send it to Larry Hecker too?
It's page 9.
Okay, and I would refer you to the bond implementation ordinance.
I think the voter guide is much more important. That's what's being sent to the voters.
Okay.
And conflicting information on page 5, and page 9 is where the real information is.
Okay. Supervisor Miller, thanks for joining in the conversation.
Okay.
Joe, do you want to add anything to that?
I think Supervisor Miller, I kind of referred to the same thing, that the taxes will actually be going down on the secondary, and therefore there's a gap, and it should be and that may be where you're getting the extra, because if you pay down one, it may be.
But you know, regardless if it's $17 or $49, it's not. You know, for some people it might be a lot of money. For others, it might be certainly something, Joe, that they would think is worthwhile for improving the community. So, bottom line, is this thing worth it to pass this and improve our community?
Well, during the break there, as I said, that we need to bring, like Marana's doing, Aurora Valley, we need to bring new money into the community that we all can share. This is just, and I always say that the government is good at taking money out of many pockets and redistributing it to fewer. And there's no new money in this. All we're doing is transferring money for one for the other. And I can't blame the people that are supporting the bond, because when you have zero growth, and that's what we're approaching. In fact, I heard the other night that we're actually below that in one article, below zero. And, we need to concentrate on trying to turn that around. Yes, there are some projects in there I think that are probably worthwhile. But
Which ones would you think?
Well, one of the major responsibilities I think of government is infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the existing parks we have and the condition that they're in especially the city of Tucson, you know, we need to address those problems before we start building anything new.
You're talking about roads?
And the roads, the same thing. And I don't agree with bonding the roads. And even Mr. Huckleberry did not agree with bonding the roads up until the last few weeks of our meetings.
Larry Hecker.
Yes. Let me respond first. I see this as an economic stimulator. Number one, there'll be an immediate stimulus with the 7,000 construction jobs that will be added. But more importantly, this will give us the ability to improve our quality of life and improve our parks and our facilities. And these are the things that the employers look at when they're deciding whether to move to Tucson or whether to stay in Tucson. It's quality of life, quality of place. And these bonds will do that. In addition, the bonds provide worker training. They provide opportunities for early stage companies to grow and get stronger. I see, and I just turn to the leading economic development and business organizations who see this as economic development at its basic.
Since we brought up the incubators, accelerators, Syracuse University did a study of over 20,000 incubated companies. And they found that the success rate of those that were not incubated, they compared to them with three that were not incubated, each of those 20,000, they found that the odds of success were twice as much with the companies that were not incubated. And why are we using, this is venture capital, why are we using public money for venture capital? I just don't understand. And now we've set up a not-for-profit corporation. One of my arguments or one of my questions to Mr. Huckleberry was, who's going to cover the operating expenses of this And it's never been answered, and it still hasn't. It hasn't been answered. They've set up a nonprofit, but it doesn't say they're going to cover those expenses.
So, Larry,
yeah, I mean, Joe talks about Syracuse. I talk about Tucson, and this is an area that I'm very familiar with because of my profession. I teach at the law school, and I work with these companies that will be housed in the incubators. They're not ready for venture capital. Venture capitalists don't invest in startups. What we're trying to do is to take advantage of the tremendous amount of knowledge that comes out of the University of Arizona. Instead of these entrepreneurs heading off to San Diego or Denver or Seattle, we want to keep them here. Every year, more and more of my students say, you know what, we can't make it happen in Tucson. We're leaving. So we need to keep our talent here. We can't continue to export our brightest people.
Still going to have 9 out of 10 of them fail, and I don't think that's a taxpayer's responsibility.
Joe, I think you need to look at the stats here in Tucson at the Science and Tech Park, the success rate, the conversion rate where the company moves out of the incubator and into rental spaces is much better than what you think. There are, I can point to you several different success stories of companies that were launched at incubators here in Tucson.
All right. Larry Hecker and Joe Bogart, thank you both very much. And Joe, is there a website that you'd like to direct people to? Or?
Yes, if they can go to PimaBondFacts.com.
Pima?
We have a lot of documentation and information there.
PimaBondFacts.com. Mm-hmm. And Larry Hecker, is there a website?
Yeah, vote yes on PimaBonds.com.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
All right, 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show. We will continue. We'll be meeting Kelly Lawton. That's coming up next. Tucson City Council candidate in Ward number 2. Back after this.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with 2 separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Thursday as we visit with famed restaurant and downtown Tucson advocate Janos Wilder. Also, charter change items on the Tucson City election ballot. Buckmaster during the noon hour from noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, and anywhere in the world live streaming podcasts in our archive on my website. That's buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Let's welcome now Kelly Lawton, Mr. Lawton, Republican candidate in Ward 2. Kelly, how are you?
Good. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
How is the campaign going?
The campaign is moving along, and we're very happy with progress, meeting folks. You know, it's hard to believe you and I just talked just a second ago about how quickly time is passing, and before we know it, we'll be at the polls November 3rd.
Tell me why you think you are qualified to be a council member, about your background. What makes you feel that you've got what's needed to fill that seat?
Well, I'll tell you what, it comes down to bottom line, it comes down to being a leader, a proactive leader. As a business leader myself, being a native Tucsonan, you know, I look at city council year over year, and, you know, I summarize, you know, the lack of leadership that's being exhibited there. I look at the current state of our city. I look at police and fire. I look at our roads. I look at our parks. I look at our economy. And, you know, to me, as a leader, I look at this and I say, you know, somebody's got to step up and somebody has to make a difference. And this is the time. We've got to make a change in Tucson, Arizona.
Your own personal experience in the business world is what?
I am the campus director for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. I've been in aviation and aerospace for 27 years. I was a former airline employee, worked for Delta for a number of years, and I'm responsible for Southern Arizona, all of Southern Arizona. I have two campuses, one at Davis-Monthan and one here at Sierra Vista in Fort Huachuca.
The incumbent, Paul Cunningham, is there something that Paul has done specifically that kind of triggered you to get involved in this?
You know, the question here, Bill, is what Paul Cunningham hasn't done. I mean, we sit back and we look at the budget. You know, it's $103 million more than it was last year. We look at roads, and Mr. Cunningham, so happy and really boasts about, well, we've paved 300 miles of our roadway. You know, in 2012, we got a proposition for roads, $20 million over 5 years. And he says, well, you know, 300 miles of road, but that's great progress. That's something to be achieved. That's less than 16% of the roads that actually need repair. You know, and we look at the issues that face Tucson, the economy. You know, we've got basically zero job growth. You know, there's high unemployment. Our property crimes are up. Our police staffing numbers are well below where they should be. You know, the list goes on and on and on. Our parks are falling apart. You know, just 2 weeks ago, Mr. Cunningham says, you know, I'm proud of the improvements that we've made in our parks, you know, and you know, we're making tremendous gains. And no more than a few days later, I go to Jesse Owens Park, and that place is falling apart. You know, it is unfortunate that we have Mr. Cunningham. You know, I've heard lots of folks, he's a great guy. You know, but the great guy is not getting the job done. We need somebody to get in there. That somebody is me, and that somebody's going to make a difference.
How about the budget? Has Mr. Cunningham made some errors there in the budget?
Well, you know, Bill, when you continue to tax, borrow, and spend, and you don't pay back into our stabilization fund, and you look and you can actually say, oh, our budget is structurally balanced. It is not. There are two of three world credit and bond rating agencies, Moody's and Fitch. Mm-hmm. They've come to the table year over year, and they've cited caution to the way that we do business and the way that we manage our city. But Mr. Cunningham continues to pass budgets that are well out of balance, and we don't pay back into our stabilization fund, and it hasn't been done for over 5 years. So, you know, year over year, we're just kicking the can down the road. We are on the road to bankruptcy. If we do not get, you know, our arms around, you know, this city, and being fiscally responsible, we're going to be in big trouble.
How about downtown, which is a real success story? The incumbents point to one of their accomplishments is downtown.
You know, kudos to them. Okay, mm-hmm. they're gonna say, well, the trolley's been a great asset. You know, $236 million trolley to go, you know, less than 4 miles. Hey, whatever. You know, they could say what they want. They can also say that, oh, we've got $800 million of infrastructure improvement downtown. Bill, there hasn't been any growth downtown in over 20 months. There hasn't been any new development in downtown in over 20 months. So, you know, the data speaks for itself. You know, the lenders, private lenders, aren't even investing in downtown. They've got to use the government lease incentives in order to get people to do things downtown. So, you know, this paints a picture, you know, and it's a very gray picture. I can remember a time as a native being in Tucson, as a native living here, we'd go downtown because Chicago store was the only music store in town, and there was nothing happening down there. It's nice to know that we have a lot of restaurants and we have a lot of bars, but where's our retail? You know, where's the real revenue generation? I mean, you know, you've been to one bar, I think you've seen them all. Okay, we need to do more with our downtown. We need to diversify our economy, and we need to do proactive things in order to turn our city around.
The bus strike, do you think that that will hurt the incumbents?
You know, it's 42 days of what I consider mismanagement. That bus strike should have, you know, and could have been avoided. You know, when you look at the transit authority, those folks that were responsible for overseeing and managing our transit system, year over year, they've been doing that for over 16 years. They've been working for the city for 16 years, making recommendations and improvements to our city and how we can function more efficiently with that bus. Now, here's the deal. The bus is so heavily subsidized, $30 million. Now, mind you, Mr. Cunningham, let me back up just a minute. Mr. Cunningham is a supporter of the bus, okay? He supports it, you know, hands down. He thinks, it's a great thing. It is a great thing. It is a great thing. But when we keep putting money into a losing proposition, there's something wrong. And I liken it to what we call revenue management in the airline business. In the airline business, every empty seat on an airplane is lost revenue. Every empty seat on a bus is also lost revenue. Mr. Cunningham says he doesn't understand that, you know, that theory. Well, it's simple, basic math. An empty seat means there's no revenue. So, you know, year over year, we continue to subsidize a bus system. We're not efficient. We need to look at the route structures. We need to look at fare increases to make that business unit profitable. It's a loser. It's a money loser.
Speaking with Kelly Lawton, Mr. Lawton, Republican candidate in Ward 2. He is going against the Ward 2 City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Ballots will be mailed out, Kelly, hard to believe, next Friday already.
Yeah, incredible. I encourage everybody, if you're not a registered voter, October 5th is the deadline to get out there and get registered. As you just said, October the 8th is right around the corner, and November 3rd is the time to make a difference in Tucson.
You know, the media has made a lot out of the fact that there hasn't been a lot of money for the three Republican challengers. Has that hindered you much or made a difference at all?
You know, when you look at money, money pays into promoting, you know, the mm-hmm. candidates. And, you know, what's interesting about this, I look at the national level campaigns, I'm like, wow, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, and I think, well, you know, I'm at just under 20, you know, mm-hmm. 20,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does make a difference. It does make a difference. And I find it to be a very important piece of running for public office because, you know, there are signs that need to be crafted and put out, and there needs to be, you know, push cards. And, you know, we need to get our message out there. And that's an important piece of this. So, yeah, the campaign strategy. Now, mind you, Bill, we got a late start. We start in November. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I take that back. April. Mm-hmm. We start in April. Now, the incumbents, on the other hand, they started in, you know, November of last year, so they've had plenty of room to run. So that's why they got a lot more money than we do.
How's the experience been for you? This is your first try at political office, right?
It's my first try, you know.
And what surprised you about it?
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. You know, yes, being new to this, for me, it's been the open-mindedness of a lot of folks that I've met, you know, going door to door. You know, there are a lot of folks in Tucson, Arizona that are sick and tired of potholes. They're sick and tired of the park, you know, situation. I mean, the surprising thing for me is, you know, there's less than 12% of the population actually shows up to vote. That's surprising to me. However, you go door to door and you're like, what can we do to change Tucson? And, you know, how are you going to do it? And the next thing you know, I'm like, you got to vote.
It is pretty shocking, isn't it? How low the turnout is expected to be. The charter change, giving the mayor a little more power. Are you in favor of that one, Kelly?
I am. Yeah, I think that, you know, you're looking at a charter that's been around for, you know, since the 1920s. And, you know, giving the mayor and the city manager a bit more span of control, I think that's important to have. Look, the city's grown significantly. You know, we've grown from, you know, a few square miles to 236 square miles. So I do believe that span of control, that responsibility needs to be improved. There needs to be more accountability at city government. Our department heads also need to feel that pressure of accountability.
Kelly Lawton, thank you for sharing some of your views with us. The website is TucsonWins.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. Or you can visit LawtonForTucson.com.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Appreciate Buckmaster it. Show. Continuing as we push toward 12:45, we'll talk Wildcat football. Where do the Cats go from here with Anthony Jimeno right after this?
It's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours, but no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2-hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson, it's the way to go.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amato is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson to hike along the Continental Divide Trail, go birding along the Gila River, visit historic Pinos Altos, or check out the world-class collection of Mimbres pottery at Western New Mexico University in historic Silver City. Plenty of great places to stay, including Agave Ridge Retreat. To find out more about the many things to do and places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the Buckmaster contributor on Wildcat Sports, Anthony Jimeno, who has spent the better part of two decades covering UA athletics, including the football beat for the Arizona Daily Star and TucsonCitizen.com. Most recently, he provides sports content for KOLD.com. He has co-written a book on Arizona basketball, 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. He's the host of the Wildcats basketball pre- and post-game shows on 1290 AM, The Fan. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good. It seems like much of Tucson is a little depressed over this football team, but I'm doing good.
Let me put you on the spot right away. Does this change what happened Saturday? Does it change your prediction of where the Cats will wind up this year?
I guess the short answer would be yes, and not just because of what happened Saturday, but because the injuries are really beginning to pile up, and the fact that Scooby Wright could be done for the season is certainly troubling. He's the one superstar to have on defense, and to be without him now, at least for the next several weeks, which frankly could take you all the way up through the end of the regular season, depending on how the rehab goes and things like that. That's a big loss for this week coming up. We don't know if Anu Solomon is going to be playing quarterback because he has a concussion. So that's probably not something we're going to know for a couple more days yet. And then just the injuries at receiver, at linebacker, now a quarterback. And the fact that they just flat out didn't play well Saturday night against UCLA. They can play better than that. But if they don't tackle, they're really going to have trouble winning this week. And, you know, against the better teams that are coming up on the schedule later in the year, the USC is now looking at Utah, which is off to a great start. So there's some rough road ahead, and as Rich Rodriguez finds a way to remind everybody every week, they're the team in the Pac-12 that got the short straw and doesn't have an off week on the regular season. So there's no time to rest. There's no time to rest and recover. They just got to plow on.
Hey, AG, it sounds like your cell is kind of breaking up. Is the battery charged? I hope.
Well, this is actually my phone, so hopefully it's okay.
I think it's pretty much broken up really, really bad. Do you want to try to call us right back?
I'll do that.
Okay. Anthony Jimeno with us on the Buckmaster Show. And while we're waiting for AG to call back here and get a decent line, the news came out today that ABC says that the lowest rated Wildcat, the Wildcat UCLA game was the lowest rated since 2006 when they started doing these Saturday night college games. I think they've done 115 of these ball games since 2006, and the UA-UCLA game was rated the lowest. I think the rating started out at something like 2.5 million viewers, and then by the time the game was over, it was down to only 1.5 million fans were listening or watching the ABC telecast. So that is really a shame that the Cats didn't get a better performance, because it really hurt having ABC have such low ratings, and you know, they may think twice about coming out here again. Anthony, are you back with us?
I am. I hope this is better.
Good, much better. I was just talking about that news that came out about ABC. They've done the Saturday night game from, well, you know, all over the country since 2006. There have been 115 games televised in that period. And guess what? The UA-UCLA game was the lowest rated ever of those games. So that's not good news for the Cats.
Well, if you look at it the other way and you say, well, at least not that many people saw how badly Arizona played. That's one way to look at it. But I think down the road, if we get 4 or 5 years down the road and there's a big game in Tucson that has implications for the league race, I'm not sure. I don't think ABC is going to think back 5 years and think, oh, my God, remember that time in 2015 where we got rid of it? If it was a good game, the ratings would have been higher.
Yeah.
But UCLA had 42 points at halftime, and people were looking. There's always other college football options.
Oh, yeah.
All day Saturday. So yeah, people were just flipping over and were watching Utah destroy Oregon, because that game wasn't necessarily close either.
Yeah.
But for somebody, for Utah to do that in Oregon was probably fascinating.
Yeah,
the UCLA-Arizona game was kind of boring.
A lot of people wanted to see Oregon get beat, I'm sure, that have been beaten over the years. Hey, I don't know if you've got your schedule handy, but let's kind of go through what's left here. Believe it or not, we're a fourth of the way through the season. I've got it in front of me if you don't have it handy there.
Yeah,
and let's talk about what these games ahead. Stanford, this does not look good for the Cats. Then you got Oregon State, Colorado, still seem very winnable, and Washington State, and Washington. So those are four winnable games in a row. Then USC, problem over there in LA. Utah looking like, my goodness, they look terrific. And ASU is a question mark. So all in all, what are we talking about here for the rest of the season, in your opinion?
Well, if you took a preseason look, you would have said, hey, Arizona, what they really need to do is they need to split those first two Pac-12 games,
mm-hmm.
UCLA and Stanford. Somehow they got, if they come out 1-1, they're going to be in really good shape.
Right.
So in that sense, the loss to UCLA isn't that damaging.
Mm-hmm.
If they can recover and beat Stanford, which is a whole different set of problems, because Stanford is just going to be super, super physical. And again, if Arizona shows that it can't tackle, it's going to be a really long night in Stanford. Then Arizona has to really make its hay in the middle of the season there. You know, home against Oregon State, they got to win that. I mean, that would be an upset if they lost. The game at Colorado, you can't play, I don't think you can play poorly and win that game anymore.
No.
Arizona is not so great where it can just walk in there and come out with a win. Colorado's improving. Washington State at home, again, put that one, you got to have that one in the win column. And then you play at Washington to end the month, and I put that in with the Colorado game. I don't think Washington's particularly good this year. They're kind of in a transition process, but they can compete. And again, if you don't play your best, they can beat you there. So in a perfect scenario, Arizona goes 4-0 in that stretch, Oregon mm-hmm. State, Colorado, Washington State, Washington. You would have thought maybe a couple weeks ago they would have been favored in all those games. I'm not sure that's going to be the case anymore. But if Arizona goes 4-0, great. They go 3-1, okay. They go 2-2 in that little four-game stretch, they're going to be in
tough.
Big trouble.
Yeah.
Because then you've got USC, Utah, and like you said, ASU. No matter where the teams are, that's always kind of a coin flip.
You know, we're very fortunate we don't get California this year.
I guess, yeah. There are Cal is one of those teams off to a good start. they have an incredibly difficult schedule coming up. So we'll see how real it is. A lot of teams get off to fast starts but then can't sustain it. But Cal, you wouldn't want anything to do with trying to stop that offense right now.
And no Oregon?
No Oregon. Arizona swapped out Oregon for Stanford this year. So I'm not sure Arizona really didn't catch a break with that scheduling either. You know, they've had good luck with Oregon in the regular season the last couple of years. Stanford last year wasn't great. They look a little bit better now. But no matter how you cut it, it's always going to be hard. But what's really hard now, in addition to, we talked about they don't have the bye week, Stanford played last Friday night, so they have an extra day of rest
right
going into this week, Arizona game. Then Arizona comes back and plays Oregon State. Well, Oregon State's off this week, so Oregon State can have 2 weeks to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Arizona can't catch any kind of a break in terms of the scheduling.
All right, Anthony, I'm going to have to wrap it up with you, but
okay.
I think, well, if the Cats don't get off to a decent start Saturday night, it'll be, as you say, a long night.
True. You don't want to be chasing the game against Stanford because Stanford is just going to sit on the ball and wear down the clock.
Underdogs, how many points do you think the Cats are going into this?
Well, there's not a lot of betting line on it because of Solomon's injury and his uncertain status. But the one line I've seen is 17.5 points.
Wow. Okay. Anthony, thank you very much, Anthony Jimeno. Thanks. All right. AG with us talking Wildcat Sports. Coming up this afternoon, 4 Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw. Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 8 with Chris and Joe, the Daily Double, Chris DeSimone, and a guest host. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with Ed Alexander tomorrow at 12:04. Have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.